Hey. Are you alive?
The sound heard around the world. World. Coming to you from the Badger's Den in Mount Vernon, Ohio. This is Four Pillar Podcast with Matt, the Honey Badger, Goddard Meyer, and Ian, Vanilla Gorilla, Lashley.
Welcome back to the Four Pillar Podcast. We stand for faith, family, fitness, and finance. And I have a special guest in here today. I have Luke Freshwater. He is the amazing writer of Bryson, the Brave Bison, which is an amazing kid's book. I might enjoy it more than my daughter does. But just about charging forward in life. And I love it. But they also have a bison farm. You said you own a business as well too now with your...
Yeah, so we started at Silver Lake Bison Farms.
Yeah. So real quick, I'll go ahead and I'll let Luke introduce himself here. And you just want to give some background information just about yourself or, you know, whatever you'd like to share.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, thanks for having me. Great to talk to you. Absolutely. So yeah, related to the children's book, I wrote a children's book called Bryson the Brave Bison that was published with HarperCollins underneath Zonder Kids as part of that. It's the number one Christian children's book publishing company in the U.S., and we were fortunate to get to partner with them. My best buddy and I, named Nate Davenport, we co-wrote the book together. It's really fun when you get to do things with your friends, right? And then we had an amazing illustrator out of Gambier, Ohio, named Richard Cowdery. He did the cover of Super Bowl 32. He's done more kids' books and things than I can shake a stick at. So we're super fortunate to have a great team of folks to get to work with. And really, the book's around teaching kids about courage and bravery, like you said. So I enjoy speaking at schools and going around and sharing a little bit about my background. So I used to be a explosive ordnance disposal officer, EOD. It's basically a long way to say the bomb squad. And I did that in the Army for 4 years. Did one tour to Afghanistan working with special forces. And so I'm super passionate about courage and bravery and facing challenges head on from some of those experiences. And that bled into the parenting side. So I have 5 young kids, 4 girls and a little boy, kind of in the thick of, they're all ages 2 to 9. So I'm super in the thick of, you know, dad life, as they say. And so that's why the book started was Bison face storms head on in real life instead of running away from it. So I use that with my kids and it really stemmed into something much larger. And I've used it to really share that message.
Yeah. I didn't know you were in the military actually. Thank you for your service. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah. So I graduated from Cedarville University, small school, played baseball there and did ROTC scholarship and went off into the bomb squad and, had some incredible leadership experiences, grew up really fast, learned a lot, worked with some, you know, incredibly courageous men and women that just taught me more in 4 years than, you know, I could have ever imagined.
What made you pick that specific, you know, I assume you probably picked your job in the military for the most part. Did you pick that or?
Not really, sort of. Yes and no. So when you're leaving ROTC, you rank what branches that you want to work in. Is the easiest way to put it. But a lot of times we call it needs of the Army. The Army will also determine what branch you got. So I got branched, something that was called ordnance. It was like my 9th choice, I think, looking back. And I was really upset. Didn't want it. We call them BB counters. I wanted to do something cool. So I remember going to the colonel saying, what's the coolest thing I can do since I got stuck with ordnance? He goes, oh, there's this thing called EOD you could try out for. And I was like, what? Tell me about it. And so he tells me all about it. And I said, that sounds cool. I'll do that. And so it sounds easier. Then you got to go through an entire year long school. You got to earn a slot. It's one of the toughest schools in the military.
Okay.
So that's
out. Really cool.
Yeah.
What's the number one thing you learned in the military then? I know you're probably blessed with having a lot of leadership around you in the military. So what's kind of the number one thing that you learned or you've taken away from someone else that they shared or showed you?
Yeah. Oh man. Like to narrow it down to one thing, I would say,
a couple things essentially.
Yeah. No, I there's one thing I often say, like the perspective advantage, I call it. And I think you don't have to get it from the military, but I think when you've gone and learned, or experienced things, like the military overseas, you experience things that many haven't, and you change your perspective on how you view things, whether that's, as a parent or as an employee or, you know, just living in America, you know, whatever it might be, your perspective changes. And I always encourage everyone, and, you know, it doesn't have to come from the military, but go do something that will shift your perspective and really help you appreciate and learn from those things. And a lot of times I hear about PTSD in the military, but I usually like to really focus on post-traumatic growth, which is basically this you know, concept of like when you go through, you know, traumatic quote-unquote things or challenging things, you become better for it. And I think too much in society, we spend too much time talking about the PTSD component and not focusing on, hey, yes, you had whatever that thing that happened, but look at all the amazing stories, right, of what's happened from people. And that's typically the, you know, I just watched like the movie The Soul Surfer with my daughters the other night. And it's all about Bethany Hamilton got bit by a shark, right? And
then very good movie.
Yeah, incredible. Yeah. And like you want to, that's the same thing. Like we want our kids to learn from that perfect post-traumatic growth experience, right? So that's probably one of the big things I learned is take those experiences, be better for them, not let it, you know, wreck you basically.
Okay. I actually never really heard that perspective before. I mean, you hear a lot of people that talk about PTSD, but they don't talk about kind of the take that you just took on it. And it's really interesting to kind of hear that perspective on it.
Yeah. I think that's the narrative. I've been interviewed a long while back from some researchers that were doing post-traumatic growth research on veterans and experiences. And I think there needs to be just a lot more kind of conversations around that for sure.
Okay. Besides that, do you have like a specific person or someone that influenced you in the military while you were there that kind of led you to, you know, maybe grow in your leadership field or just in general?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was fortunate in the EOD community. It's small, it's tight knit. Anything in the first responder, usually in, you know, special operations community, you really get to know people. So I would say more it was getting to work with these team, we call them team leaders. These are the guys. Mm-hmm. I was more on the leadership side. So without getting details of the military, I was like the manager, right? So I got to manage these bomb squad teams. So my team leaders were the guys and gals that would go down on the IEDs, or they were like the experts. And my job was really to make sure to take care of them, make sure that everything they need, go run missions with them, whatever it was. But I was more of the leadership side. So working with them, I think for me was just seeing the courage, the bravery, the toughness, the hard work they would put in, and just like getting to lead. You know, I think that's where I learned leadership, right? You don't have to be, you know, the most, that's what even our book is about, right? So you don't have to be the most talented. You don't have to be the most whatever, you know, courage is a choice. And the leadership component is like, I didn't have to be the most talented bomb squad guy. Most people think like I had to know every chord to cut, right?
Right.
That wasn't my job. My job was to lead the guys that were smarter than me. And I think that's what leadership is all about. So for me, that's what I learned is like, hey, when I first came to the unit, you know, they'll humble you real quick in the special operations group, especially as an officer. Like they'll prank you and they'll do stupid stuff to you, right? Just to mess with you. And what they're doing is they're testing your humility. They're testing, you know, can you take this or not? Are you going to be super prideful? You know, what type of leader are you going to be? So it really helped me learn that. And some people didn't handle it well, and some leaders did. It just depends, but it taught me a lot.
Okay. That's really cool. Do you have a story you like to share? Obviously you don't have whatever you want to talk about or share or not share, whatever, but I always like to ask people if they have like a favorite story or experience they like to share from when they served.
Yeah, no, there's, yeah, so I kind of I'll share. There's a few, but I think it's a good point. You know, I always encourage other veterans. You know, everyone has their own kind of experience with the military, but I remember when my grandpa got back from World War II, a lot of that generation, even Vietnam and some Korea guys, like a lot of times it stayed like inside. They kept a lot of inside and share a lot of it.
Yeah, my grandpa's in Vietnam, and I heard more from my grandmother than I did him.
Yeah.
He hardly ever talks about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I say that to say, before I even tell a story, is like, I think it's important that our generation, and I think they do a good job of like sharing that, because how does anyone that wasn't in the military or your kids or your family, how do they learn from those experiences? Right. If we keep it all inside and it just like sits there. Right. And no one can learn from it. And it can kind of eat at you sometimes. So that all being said, I always encourage people like ask veterans their story, you know, ask them like that question.
Okay. So that wasn't an inappropriate question.
No, it's fine. I mean, it's up to them if they want to share it or not. Right. Or maybe just ask them, what was your job? That's always a good question. Cause a lot of people want to thank him for his service. Like, what was your job in the military? And they probably were super passionate about your job. You asked me about EOD. I love sharing about EOD.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can always ask that question. But anyway, so when I was in Afghanistan, you know, like I was saying, I had these two-man bomb squad teams that are each attached to a different special forces team. And they were basically that special forces team bomb squad guys. They would take care of IEDs. They would do whatever they needed. And so I would go do ride-alongs with them and fly out to these sites. So this particular time, I flew out to this site. We were running a mission, and my team was. And in fact, my commander, who was typically back in the United States, he came over to Afghanistan for a few weeks. So we had this fun trip planned where I flew him out, and it was kind of like a joke, but he hadn't been overseas at this point, right, with right. us. So we're like, we're going to find the craziest mission to take him on, and we're all joking around, right? So we go out on this mission. And I hadn't done a lot myself either. It was my first deployment. So of course I'm all excited sure. too. So we're on like ATVs, like souped up ATVs and trucks, and we're rolling out and we end up on these two mountaintops, and, you know, fast forward however many hours, we end up in a firefight. Firefight's like a gunfight. Like you're bad guys on the other side. We're shooting mountaintop to mountaintop. And me and my commander at the time, we're all lined up on this mountaintop, and we end up on this, like, basically ATV, you know, two machine guns, and we're firing, and we're on the radios, and he looks over at me, or I'll fast forward. We're going back and forth, and I remember running out of ammunition on my machine gun, right? And I remember, like, it's a split second, it was always stuck with me, is because I saw bullets hit in front of me, you know, and, like, previous to that, actually, my commander said he got shot in his side, and I joked with him that he had, and he actually took a round to his body armor, we found out when we got back, but that's a whole other story. And, but I remember when I ran out of ammo, I ducked behind, because there was no safety, we're just, like, shooting across mountaintops.
Right.
And I ducked behind this little vehicle by the tire, and I remember thinking in my head, like, I'm safe right where I'm at, right? Because, like, I didn't want to have to reload because I wasn't firing, so, like, you have this split moment, I ducked behind the tire, and I remember thinking, if I sat right here, I'd be, like, safe, right? And then I heard my commander firing, and we call it, like, singing machine guns, basically, where, like, he fires, I fires, and it's a way it's the way you kind of keep the enemy's heads down, and there's different aspects to it. But I remember hearing him fire, and well, of course, there was no fire back for me because I'd run out of ammunition, and usually you yell something like reloading, right, or whatever. And so I immediately popped up. It was like a fraction of a second in my head, right, where I dot down and I popped back up. But for me, it was always a reminder. I use it to tell people, like, courage is a choice, right? Like, you have to choose to get back up. You have to, it's like inside. And so that's something that just, like, always sticks with me, is, like, you have to choose to be courageous.
Right. Yeah, because you could have chose to just...
I could have sat behind that tire, right? And it would have been the wrong decision. I could have sat there and let him keep firing away.
Right.
But I had to internally make the decision, like, I'm going to get up. I'm going to reload this weapon because he's relying on me to make that courageous decision, right? But it happens, like, in a split second of time. But I remember thinking in my head, like, that's what courage is. Like, it's you have to make that decision. It doesn't just necessarily happen. You can be scared, but you have to make that decision.
Right. Yeah, that's a really cool story.
Yeah,
thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving forward, Bryson the Brave Bryson. Now you wrote that when you got back, like after you served, you came back home and stuff, and like what inspired you and led? Well, obviously, I kind of already realized, you know, what maybe inspired you to write that about bravery and courage, but what led you to come up with that concept, and how do you put all that together, kind of thing?
Yeah, so I found out that, and a lot of people still don't know this, but in real life, like over in the prairies or out west, when a storm's approaching, bison don't run away from it, like in real life, like a cow or a squirrel, or I use all these other analogies, they would run away from it. Bison choose to face the storm. They run into the storm. So I learned that concept. There's Rich Froning, who has the end of the storm analogy. There's some other, there's corporate, I've learned over time, there's a lot more than I realized out there that use this analogy. But I was using it for parenting, is what I started doing it. So I learned about it, and I started using it with my kids when things would get hard. They were really young. And so kids learn from animals and analogies. So I started doing that a lot with the kids. And then my good friend Nate and I were talking about it, and he's a very whimsical minded writer. He was a dad too. Yeah. And so we thought this would be really cool to do a kid's book together, you know, and take this concept and put it into a kid's book for our kids. And it started really small. We didn't have these like grand plans of HarperCollins. Like it was more just, let's just make something for our kids that we can do for them. Obviously, you know, God had bigger plans for the book, and we got to connect with Richard and all that stuff. But that's where it stemmed from. And then I've just used it in everything. I've used it at work and sales leadership. I've used it, you know, in my own life, you know, when I have challenges, and it just kind of stemmed to be like, and then obviously I wanted to bring the character to life. So Silver Lake Bison Farm got created, and I always wanted to bring Bryson to life in the book in real life. So now he's in my backyard. And every day I wake up,
awesome.
Bryson's back there.
That's awesome. So how did you think the book kind of took off? I mean, as far as that goes, like, how do you think it got kind of recognized and stuff? Obviously, I'm sure God had a big plan with that as well. But is there something that you think that kind of helped it take off, or maybe more so than something else? Or
well, I think that you know, I don't even know if I'd say it took off, quote unquote. I just think I think really it's more of just parents. Like, I'm in the parenting stage, like I mentioned, and for me, I wanted to give other dads and moms a book that A is fun to read, right? Like, yeah. I mean, I'm biased, but I really want it to be like when you read the book, like you as a dad, like actually like to read it. Like, I've read a lot of books where I'm like, oh my gosh, well, I have to read this book one more time.
Right. Well, the one thing as well, too, I joked to my wife about this is like, why does it always have to be like mom and me, right? You know, right. Like, you notice there's hardly any books. There are some, but it's like the mom and me book or the mom and this or the mom book. Like, it's all about the mom. So,
yeah. Yeah. We wanted a book that like a dad, obviously moms read a lot of them. I want a mom to read it, but we want a book where like a dad reads it. Like, yeah, that's right. Like, we got to read that again. You know, like it's was like one piece of it. And the other piece is like, man, kids, like, I don't care if it's a pandemic. I don't care if it's whatever, open the news. Right. And you see what kids are facing. And so it was like, well, I wanted to give, you know, other dads and moms something that they could use. And I'm super passionate about resilience and courage and leadership, all these aspects. And you can take this analogy and like run with it as a parent. I mean, you could use it, you know, we use an analogy of like, yeah, like specifically faith isn't in the book, but like we talk about how like, well, where do we get the courage from? So I use a lot of my kids, like we get the, like Bryson and us using that as an analogy, we get our courage from God, right? Like that's who gives us the strength to get through these challenges, right? So you can use these analogies as a parent, and that's what we want. We want to just give them like a tool to go out there. And I think, you know, people, parents, kids are looking for that type of thing. At least I was. You know, and we're just, you know, lots of people are doing great things out there. We just wanted to add one more tool in the tool chest for you know, parents to read and make it fun. And then Richard just like, he's a crazy illustrator. He does it all by hand. I mean, it's like, then you want to work with extremely talented people. And it's like, who better than, you know, this guy's amazing. And so to get to see him bring it to life, because that was a part we were worried about. He was incredible.
Yeah, illustrations are very good. Very good.
Yeah, crazy talented guy.
What would be something that you've learned as being a parent? How old are your kids now?
The youngest is my boy 2, and then all my girls are ages 4 to 9.
4 to 9. Okay. So my daughter is 3 and a half, roughly about 3 and a half. I already have a second one here, actually probably next Monday.
That's awesome.
So what's something you've learned as being a dad that you'd share to another parent with essentially less experience?
Yeah. One of the biggest things I think that, and I didn't come up with this, but a friend of mine did, he uses this saying, and I'm sure he took it from somebody else, so I'll just pass it along. It's far more is caught than taught. And so
I like that.
What basically the essence of it, right, is pretty simple, but we talk a lot. We tell our kids a lot, like whatever it is, as a school or as parents, we don't do that. Don't do this, you know, whatever, you name it. But really what matters most is they're going to catch what we do. And I always try to remember that, because it's like, I can say whatever, I can, you know, say all these things, and the whole concept of do what I say, you know, not what I do type thing, or you know, whatever. But at the end of the day, your kids are going to do what you do. If you work out and you're into fitness, you know, they're going to see that. And more than likely, that's going to rub off on them. If you're getting church every Sunday, right, and prioritizing your faith, it doesn't matter what it is. Whatever's important to you, your kids are going to see that. And so I tell any parent, like, focus more on what you do. And, you know, I'm not saying go say stupid stuff, right? But that's what's most important. Like, don't focus on telling them, focus on doing it, and your kids are going to catch it. I mean, if you want them to do something, we have to do it first.
You think that could be applied for like leadership in general? I mean, I think even if you have employees or you're a leader in general for whatever circumstance, I mean, that's a pretty good thing you could even conduct yourself by 100%, in general.
100%. Yep. I mean, you know, that's what I think is funny about like parenting, right? Is like the same principles that you use at home, which I say it's like you're leading your home, right? Like my greatest calling in leadership is leading my home. But, you know, it's the same thing. You take those principles, and when you go into the workplace, same concepts are going to be effective and matter.
Yeah. Okay. Very awesome. I like that a lot. I'm probably going to steal that from you.
Go for it. steal away. Go for it.
Okay. So what about, how long have you been married now as well too?
Oh, I've been married, 12 years, 12 okay. years. Yep. Almost awesome. 13.
Okay. So same question, but about marriage now, what would be something you share to someone else that hasn't been married as long with less experience?
Oh man. As a guy, as a husband, it's funny this brings up, because I just had Bible study this morning, we were going through First Peter, and there's specifically First Peter 3 talks about, you know,
talks about love, peace, love, right?
So we're specifically talking about, you know, we as men like to just focus on maybe the first part, like women being submissive to their, you know, husbands, but the, you know, we don't read the rest. And it's like,
you gotta read the whole thing.
Like, and so I it talks about Christ, you know, and his bride, the church, and the fact that for me, if I give anybody, it's like humility. Our number one thing as a husband is pride gets in our way. You know, me included and everybody, we want control. We have this pride, that peace that we have to always have to fight. So the more you lift your wife up and push yourself down, and I'm not saying like you put yourself down, but like you lift your wife up, and the humility aspect, it's like, and you have to remember every day, because it's not like natural a lot right. of the times. And so if I gave anybody that's like newly married guy, especially a guy that wants to, you know, get after it and accomplish things in life and do all this stuff, it's like you have this natural desire to be controlling and prideful, and the less you do that, and the more you put her first, and even as I get older, I've learned, you know, my wife has developed just like I have, right? And finds new hobbies, skills, things about herself, is to encourage and build up your wife in whatever it is that you find that she has desires and wants to be fulfilled in and purpose, yeah. right? And I think for us, like you then create this atmosphere where both of you are supporting each other and sacrificing for each other. And you're working together as a team versus constantly trying to, like, you know, outdo each other. Or I saw a post today that was great. It's not a 50-50 thing. God gives us different skills and gifts. So it might be 80-20 on something, and it might be like 199, right? But that's okay. We're working together, and we take whatever gifts and skills God gives us, and we lift each other up on it.
Yeah, I like that. It's very good. Share your testimony about how you got into faith, like raised in faith home, not raised. I assume you probably maybe were. I think I talked to you a little bit about this, but just kind of share your testimony or what kind of led you to your faith and, you know, how you got there.
You know, I was fortunate, I was raised in a family, and not everybody, I guess, stays in the faith, but I was fortunate to have, and like far more is caught than taught, just right. And so from my dad, if I caught anything, and my mom, it was the faith aspect, and I'm super grateful for that. It's the most important aspect. And so I was raised in a family that had Christ first, and, you know, church was a priority, but not just church. It was, I got to see my mom and dad live that out at home, you know? And so, but you know, obviously I went off and started my own life. My parents actually just moved in with us now, which has been super cool. But, from a testimony standpoint, you know, I got saved young as a kid, grew up in the church, but I feel like, you know, there's different stages sometimes in your faith, right? You know, I wouldn't say I ever like departed and went rebellious and disappeared, but I do think, right. you know, that there was times in my life where I didn't prioritize it enough, or, you know, I wouldn't, but as I get older, and as I have kids, and as I become a dad, and as I just go through these different things, you know, the more and more you realize, and that's why, you know, now in my life, man, I find good men to be around, you know, is one big thing, right, that I've learned. I've moved around a lot, so I'm super passionate about getting around good, solid other men. They don't have to be perfect, man. A lot of them have testimonies and crazy things, but that's how you learn. I mean,
absolutely.
So that's kind of my testimony, I guess, is I grew up, you know, in a great home, was fortunate to have great parents that, you know, had Christ in our home, but, you know, I had to make the choice myself. You know, I got to create that. I know a lot of people, unfortunately, you know, don't do that, or maybe they stray and they come back, right? Or whatever their testimony is. But yeah, that was a big piece of my life. And I'm fortunate that both mom and dad are a huge part. Now they're pouring into my kids, man. So it's super cool.
Yeah. Well, what was your biggest obstacle with your faith, or something you had to deal with, if you had a challenge with it?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I would say it was the military. You know, the military culture is, I used to have a pastor used to say, like, it was like, if you want to help people get divorced, send them into the military. And I hate to say it, but it's not conducive to us. And you can do it, but it is hard. It takes a lot of work.
Were you married while you were in the military?
Yeah, so we got married. I met my wife when I was in bomb squad school. We got married, and then I was gone our whole first year of marriage. So I literally, my wife and I joke, we never spent more than 3 days together in a row until a year after marriage.
Okay.
I mean, so like she kind of like jumped into the fire with me, which I think ultimately in the long run really helped us build a really strong foundation. But, you know, in the military just created a perfect example, right? But I had soldiers and people that lived around me, and they had deployment after deployment. It wasn't even just deployments. This is very, you know, high stressful, high anxiety, hard working, and it just builds over time. And, you know, whether it's drinking or, you know, it's there's all kinds of things, right? I mean, we hear a lot about it, but it is true. It's a very tough culture. And for me, you know, I didn't have a lot of people that I worked with that their faith was, you know, I had maybe one guy. There's one guy, I was fortunate that I even had one guy, that him and I were both Christians, right? And we leaned on each other, and that was really important. But it was tough. Like, I'd be lying if I said it was easy. It was like, it was super tough because you have all these guys doing all this stuff. I mean, for anyone that's played sports, right? Like, and when everyone, you get together on a team with a bunch of guys that are super committed, just put that on steroids, you know, and then you get around right. that. And it's like, and you're with them 24/7. Yeah. And so, you know, it was tough. You know, it challenged me. You know, I didn't make every perfect decision. You know, I made mistakes, but I was able to learn from that, grow from that. So for me, that was the most challenging part, you know. And then probably the second most was when I got out, was really challenging, because now I just changed. You know, I went into corporate America and I changed my entire everything I knew. Right. And so that was really hard for me as well.
Okay. And now you have a separate business as well besides the Bison Farm. Is that correct? You're talking about something with like food or something?
We still have a family. We have a franchise. My mom and dad run the day-to-day.
Macaron
French pastries, Macaron food truck. We take a food truck. It's actually, right. you know, comes here to Mount Vernon and places.
Okay. Yep. So the handling the Bison Farm, that and all that stuff. What's the number one business advice that you've gotten from somebody, or like what's a good business tip that you share to somebody that's made you successful, you feel like?
I would say, kind of going back to what we talked about, it was like, don't do it all yourself, and surround yourself with really great people. I think like too many, whether it's business owners, people in, you know, even corporate America that have leadership positions or whatever, you don't have to do everything, you know, like the franchise business, a perfect example. You know what? My mom and dad and also some employees, they do most of it. You know, I help kind of get them going and help get things started, but it taught me, like, you know, focus on what you're good at and support people and help people along the way, but you don't have to do every single thing. Like, God didn't make you perfect at everything, right? So right. leverage other people's skills and gifts, and that's what makes it fun. It's like being on a sports team, right? When you're a football player or, you know, whatever team sport, you know, you had a running back, you had a quarterback, you had linemen, you know, and if you put the running back as a lineman, no, it's like, oh, who's going to run? The lineman's not going to run behind him, right? Like, right. So I think in business, it's the same thing. It's like, surround yourself with really great people. Don't try to do it all, and help them get better, and then ultimately everybody gets better.
Yeah. I think that's something I struggled with, which I know I'm probably a control freak, and I think I tell people that, because I mean, it's hard when you know, you're running your own business and you have stuff you want done a certain way or whatever, but yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So with that being said as well, balancing your faith, family, even your fitness and finances and everything. So basically some people call it the work-life balance, you could say. What do you do to keep everything balanced, or, you know, is there a balance to you, or how does that work? How does that work in your life?
Yeah. I mean, we focus so on like this term, like work-life balance, or however that word is, but I always boil it down to like intentionality. You know, I think you have to prioritize what's most important. So, you know, we make the things that are most important in life important for, like, we make time for that. So, you know, whether it's you're looking at your calendar, and some people are hardcore on scheduling their whole day, right, or whatever, or maybe you just prioritize your day and you take it day by day. It doesn't matter how you do it. It's figure out what's most important. So for me, like, let's take the faith aspect. If that's, you know, which it is the most important for me, it's like, okay, am I prioritizing making it to church every Sunday? Or, you know, oh, we're tired today, we're not going to go. Yeah. You know, am I prioritizing going to men's Bible study? Oh, it's 5:30 a.m. I'm not getting up. You know, I'm gonna sleep in today. So, you know, whatever, like, that for me is like, no. Like,
is that what time you do your Bible?
It starts at 6.
Okay.
But I work out with some guys at 5:30.
Okay, cool.
So it just depends. But at the end of the day, it doesn't even really matter if it's a perfect schedule. It's, are you prioritizing those things, right? Whether it's fitness, you know, make it a priority. You're not putting the time, you know, they always say, like, if you want to see what's important to someone, look at where they spend their time and look at their bank and their checkbook, basically, right? Or check, I guess, the checkbook, look at their bank account.
Right.
It's like, where's your money going? Because that's always going to say what's important to you. And then where are you spending your time? So for me, it's all the pillars you're just talking about. Faith, number one. Family. You know, I schedule dates with my girls and my kids. I read a book. I'm drawing a blank on the name, but it's called the Family Board Meeting, basically. But okay. The essence of it, it's super simple.
Is it by the Bethkes?
Is that who it is?
Alyssa and I just drew a blank on his name. It sounds familiar. My wife and I read Take Back the Family.
Okay, I haven't read that one.
It sounds like they have a familiar, it could be different people, but they kind of have a similar idea, is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like putting it on, we use the COZI, cozy calendar. It's a family calendar. And it's like, we put, you know, whether it's date nights or to me taking the girls, like I'm taking one of my daughters to the zoo on an evening, and we schedule it and we make a big deal out of it. And then we go to dinner and I spend one-on-one time with the kids. And I'm super like busy, obviously, right? But if I don't put it on the calendar, I don't say, hey, from this time to this time, I'm doing this, it just doesn't happen. Like, too much going on, you get tired, and you don't prioritize it. So anyway, just be super intentional is my goal. Figure out what's most important, put those things on the calendar, and then build, you know, everything else around that.
Yeah, okay. I do the same thing. I use Google Calendar, or do you have something?
We use Cozy, C-O-Z-I. Oh,
okay. That's actually like a calendar company.
Yeah, it's like an app on the phone.
Gotcha.
And the whole family can log into it, but same thing.
Right. Okay. What, is there anything else you'd like to share about? I don't know if you have any insight on, fitness and finance or anything that, you know, just covering like kind of the last two pillars from your experience that, you know, you have that you could share with somebody.
Yeah. I mean, well, I guess on the fitness side, you know, I'm no freak of nature, you know, fitness geek, but
do you work out every day or?
Yeah. You know, I think I always say like, you know, showing up is the majority of the battle right there. Once you show up, you know, you end up loving the workout, you end up loving the people you're around. But I think the hardest thing for most people is showing up, and maybe some people are morning. I'm a morning person. I was in the military, you know, and so you just show up, you know, and then I like to work out with the older I get, the more I like to work out with other guys, cause I like the fellowship aspect of it as well. And I know it motivates me. I know when someone else is saying, you know, hey, texting me, whatever, you know, like looking forward to it. So I'll just say from a fitness perspective, you kind of go in stages, at least it seems like to me in life, of like what fitness looks like for you.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you're competing cause you're an athlete, you know, the next stage of life, like I'm a dad, like I'm trying to let my kids see fitness is important. Taking care of your body is important. Sometimes we have a Peloton at home. You know, if you would have told me I was going to run a Peloton and like do that little, I would have like, I guess only women do that. You know, I'm not doing a Peloton, but I'm like, you know what? I go upstairs and I have like five kids running around me and they see dad dripping in sweat and I'm yelling at him to do pushups and burpees while I'm like hammering. I'm like, and then my wife can use the Peloton. I'm like, whatever. I don't care. Like, I don't need to look pretty anymore. Like, it's more about just like, you know, am I getting a workout in? Am I building my body? And then, and then how do I even, and I encourage people like get even more out of it. Like, are you fellowship with other men? Are you training your family, your kids, right? Are you going on a hike? Maybe it's a hike, you know, fitness changes over time, but it's just make it a part of your life, whatever that looks like.
Yeah. Okay.
Finance wise. Oh gosh. That's probably like we could do a whole podcast on finance, man. But you know, I'm not a financial advisor. What I'd say is I've learned is the same thing like everything else, you know.
Yeah.
Where you spend your money is what you're saying is important to you. So for us, you know, like when it comes to like giving and tithing, and, you know, I think that, you know, I'm actually at church this upcoming week doing the offering, kind of quick 3-minute thing. Right. And, you know, I think that I want to be known as being radically generous. You know, we talk about wanting to be known for a lot of things in life. Which I think is like, right? I would be known as the best this or the best that, or we at least thinking in our head, but no one ever, at least I don't hear a lot of people talk about, I want to be known as being someone that's radically generous, right? And so it's hard to do. But the older I get, the more I'm like, man, that would be super cool if people knew me as someone that was just, and I'm not even saying just money. I'm talking about time, giving, like all that stuff.
You can be radically generous in other ways besides financially.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I think, but our attitude towards finance will feed into all that stuff. And so, you know, if you're faithful with little, you know, God's going to see you hopefully with faith, you know, he's going to see you faithful with much. Like, it doesn't matter how much you're given. That's how he looks at it. That's how I try to look at it. So, you know, you go 1,000 routes, but I think at the end of the day, it's be intentional with your finances. Where is it going? You know, and then from a kid's standpoint, I've started to talk with my kids about finance. Like, my daughter's selling eggs and we have like three buckets, and we started super simple, like save, spend, give. And then we start having conversations about, okay, well, what are you giving it to? And why are you doing that? You know, and just like, okay, here's spend. What do you spend it on? What do you say? So, you know, like do it with your kids. And I share money. How much does this cost, Dad? Like, you know, and you're like, that was $2,000. Whoa. You know, they don't even understand, you know, numbers fully, but like, I don't know why we want to like hide money sometimes from our kids. And there's a certain point, you know, you cross the line, but at the end of the day, it's like, how else do they learn about money? They learn it from you. So we talk about money in the house.
Right. Yeah. I think it's an interesting thing about parenting. Cause I don't know how your parents were. Obviously, like my parents were, I hear a lot of people, my friends, like their parents don't really talk about, they just don't talk about it, like finances. So when you get older, whatever, in high school and college, like you have kids that like they don't know how to, like they don't know any basic financial literacy. So that's a really interesting. You said you have go and explain the. You said you have the three bucket thing again, right? So it's a save, spend, give.
Yeah.
And so do you basically like give them an allowance or like whatever, and then she can divide that up, or do you suggest how she should divide it up, or kind of what's your your rule or your thing you do there?
We actually just, so it's interesting because I'm still working this out, right?
Okay,
so
I like
she's just it's hitting really the age idea. She's gonna be 9, so we're just kind of hitting the age where I feel like she's capable of some of this.
Yeah.
And so the way I, and I'm not saying my way is, you know, right, I'm actually learning and reading stuff and listening to podcasts myself on how to approach
things. Did you get this idea from
I got it from, like, I think it was a friend who mentioned it, or I listened to it on something, and I'm still kind of developing it, because what I really want to do is end up actually putting it on a really simple spreadsheet or piece of paper and letting her see how much money comes in. But no, I don't do allowances. I want to train them that you earn, you know, you create value for somebody. So in this case, it's eggs. You're creating value by providing them eggs. Right. You get this money in, but then there's feed costs for the eggs. Okay, well, how much does that cost? Okay, and then they go to, she goes to the store with my wife and they buy the feed, and she sees it costs $30 or whatever, right? It's like, oh, you just lost half your money already. It's already gone, right? Because you had to feed the chickens, but now you got this much left. Okay, now that goes into those buckets. Well, how do you determine, you know, how much to put in each bucket? And that's kind of where we're at now, is I want her to learn it rather than just telling her what to do it. So then I'll have conversations with her where how much you think you should keep, right? And then how much you think you should save. And then it makes them think about it, is kind of my approach. Like, I always want them, I try not to tell. I try to help them learn through it and just kind of coach them along the way. And so that's what I've been doing with her, is just kind of letting her kind of guide it and or make the decisions. I just guide her along the path.
Is that kind of the first thing you've done as finance-wise with your kids, or did you do anything at a younger age or anything?
No, I would say this is probably our first, like, really kind of diving into, like, the finance side. Okay. You know, and I think some kids probably could handle it earlier, but my daughter hates numbers is also a piece. She doesn't like math.
So, like our daughter's, you know, she's 3.5. We just got her piggy bank, right?
Yeah.
So it's like a thing. Like, I mean, I don't think she understands anything what's going on besides, like, money goes into it, and, you know, she doesn't do anything with it, but it's still kind of, it's interesting.
Well, I will tell you, actually, you know, I guess we did start earlier, so we had the food truck business and the franchise business. So one of the things that our oldest daughter, she's probably doing 2 years now, she'll go with my dad on the food truck.
Okay.
And she'll actually work, and we'll have her work the register and actually take money. And so what she learns from that is a lot of customer service type stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so she'll get tips, and we pump up the tips, because then when you're providing great value and providing great service, you get tip, and then she gets a cut of the tips, and then she takes the money from the tips, and then she gets to go use it. And instead of just getting paid like an allowance, now she learns, oh, if I'm more customer centric and have a smile and do these things, now, you know, I get a tip because of that service. And so we'll use that as like a kind of a driver. So we did do that starting a couple years ago.
Okay. What is the number one thing that, or maybe not number one, or like one of the most things that pops your head that motivates you or drives you or something like that as well?
Yeah. Like business wise or just in general?
Just in general.
Yeah. Oh man, I guess the older I get, it'd be impact, purposeful impact, I guess, on people's lives. You know, I think starting younger, even now, I get caught up maybe on things that don't really matter. More I care about, am I making an impact with whatever I'm doing? The kids' book, the work I do, having a podcast and talking with you, right? Like, what impact am I leaving? And I'm really driven by leaving it. I'm not driven by recognition very much. I mean, certainly, like anybody else, I'd love to be recognized, but I'm mostly driven by, like, what impact did this have, especially on, like, people, you know, and being, you know, a Christian, like, you know, that's the driver of it. And so that's how I try to weigh, like, my time and what I'm doing, whether it's impact on my family, impact on my friends, impact on my church. And it's changed where I spend my time. I know a lot of guys that are, like, obsessed with video games, right? Or Netflix, or I don't know. And I think, you know, I'm not saying you can't watch that or do that at all, but I'm saying is, like, for me, you know, it's like, am I making an impact with these things? Maybe you are. Maybe you got a group of 10 guys you play video games with and you're witnessing to them while you do video games, right? Like, I don't know. But I'm saying that's how I kind of evaluate the use of my time and what I'm doing is what kind of return from an impact perspective do I get from this?
Yeah. That's a really good answer.
I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, there's not a right answer. I was just saying, I just like that answer. It's a good answer.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah, so I guess what's just off the wall question here. So, like, what's your favorite Netflix show or your you brought up video games. So do you have a favorite video game?
No, I don't Netflix even. I bring up video games because I guess that's a sore subject for not sore subject, but I'm not a video game fan. Yeah. I don't even have video games in my house. My poor kids, like my son's only 2, but he'll probably be like me. You know, when I was like growing up, like Call of Duty was coming out and I'd go to the Call of Duty parties and I didn't even know, you know, what does A do? What does B do? You know, like I wasn't. So again, Farm Wars caught in the top, right? My dad didn't really let us play video games, and I'm actually thankful for it now. And so but as far as like my wife and I think that we've kind of stopped watching. We used to watch like shows together, I think, but honestly, and this is another thing from marriage family, is my wife and I like enjoy working together on things. You know, we have the farm now or whatever we're doing. And so instead of watching Netflix or something, and we'll do that from time to time, but now we keep the TV off. And when the kids go to bed, we just like spend time talking about our dreams and goals and, you know, working on stuff together. And that's way more fulfilling and purposeful. And, you know, you get to know each other and you have conversations versus just turning the TV on. Now, sometimes you just want a good movie and you want to chill and you don't want to talk to each other. Maybe you just want to relax. So there's nights for that. But I mean, we haven't been watching a Netflix show in a while, but Soul Surfer honestly was like, I was like, this is a good movie. So that's the most recent thing I watched movie wise. I honestly can't think of a show we've been watching recently because we haven't watched anything.
That's fine. Last question here for you. We can wrap this up. What's your number one book recommendation? Besides Bryce and the Brave Bison.
Of course.
besides that one.
Of course. I don't know if I'd say number one, but it just comes to mind because I just went to an event that he was at. But there's a book, Tom Ryan, Ohio State wrestling coach, is a book he wrote called Chosen Suffering. And it's his testimony, really it's his story of, and for me at home, because he lost a child young as a dad. And so, if you're looking for just a good book that's not some big, huge, you know, I could tell you Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink or some super great books out there. Sure. But honestly, if you just want one that's like a down to earth guy that just shares his testimony, check out Chosen Suffering by Tom Ryan, head coach of Ohio State Wrestling. Just awesome. Awesome.
Very cool. Is there anything else you want to share or anything before we cut this off?
No, man, I'm just love having good conversations with people like yourself. I think we can't have enough of it. So I just appreciate you having me and letting me share a little bit about my story.
Absolutely. And then, author of Bryce and the Brave Bison, buy it on Amazon or, you know, wherever, like where do you sell it at?
Yeah. Amazon? So you can check out Bryce and the Brave Bison. You can buy it on Amazon anywhere you buy books. You can also check out Silver Lake Bison Farm. We have a big Instagram channel. Love sharing everything about homesteading, parenting, you know, all that kind of stuff. So definitely check us out.
Awesome possum. Well, thanks for listening. If you believe it, you can achieve it. And we'll see you in the gym soon.